So just to say that this retreat, we're going through the material which is written down in a sutta called the Satipatthana Sutta, and which is the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, the Buddhist teachings on mindfulness. And the Four Foundations of Mindfulness refer to the foundation of mindfulness of the body, and then you have mindfulness of feeling, and you also have mindfulness of mind states, and you have mindfulness of the big word, actually, maybe you could even say mindfulness of reality, but that's the last bit, that's the most difficult bit, we'll get to that last. So today, mindfulness of feeling. And I just like to say that we're not going to talk about feelings in the way that we are used to talk about feelings. When we use the word feelings in the English language, you refer to this whole range of everything that's sort of going on in your emotional world. So there's often not a lot of difference between feelings and emotions when we're using language. So, we're talking about something completely different, actually, when we're talking about feeling. Not completely different, because there's definitely a relationship, a very strong relationship between feeling and emotion. But in the Buddhist sense, we're talking about feelings, we're talking about a feeling tone. And we're talking about a feeling tone of... there's always a feeling tone to our experience. Every moment there's a feeling tone to our experience. So you could say in every moment we're experiencing something that might be pleasant, something might be neutral, or something might be unpleasant. So that is the Buddhist theory. And so in any given moment your experience would have that kind of aspect of the feeling tone. There's always another aspect, which is the actual, whatever is the experience coming to you via the six senses, and the mind sense is one of those senses. So it could be you're hearing something, it could be you're feeling something or tasting something, but it could also be that there is a mind object arising in your mind, like a memory, for instance, or some sort of thought just arising from out of nowhere. We don't know where it's coming from, we don't know where it's going. So that, those kind of moments in the Buddhist tradition, you could say that's the moment of contact. So there is something coming up and you're perceiving it, and it has a feeling tone according to the Buddhist philosophy. So that's a given, I hope. And what we've been doing today in meditation is we've been trying to find in our experience that feeling tone. So the whole feeling spectrum actually goes from ecstasy to agony. So sometimes we say it's pleasant, neutral, or unpleasant, but it is a whole spectrum. So something can be, you can feel something, and it could be very, very, very unpleasant. It could be slightly unpleasant, or you don't care, you don't really perceive it. There's nothing happening, neutral. Or it could be very pleasant and extremely pleasant and ecstatically pleasant. Mm-hmm. So there's this whole spectrum going on. So, but what happens in our minds, also in any given moment, is that the feeling tone, we will be reacting to the feeling tone with all the conditioning we bring from the past. Mm-hmm. Our cultural conditioning, our whatever we've done in the past, our reactions in the past, our habits. So all of that we bring to our experience in any given moment. So suppose that you have a moment of contact. Just suppose that you're hearing a sound, and you might perceive, you might have this, you might notice that this sound has a pleasant feeling tone, it's a pleasant sound, and then how you react to that, that is emotion. So it could make you irritated. It's not very often that a pleasant sound will find you getting into irritation, but it could make you irritated, or it could make you angry or worried, or it could make you very, very happy or very, very joyful because it reminds you of something. So that whole area we would call, that all is emotion. And that is what you're bringing to this original moment of that has a feeling tone. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So that's the theory of it. And so what we're trying to do with mindfulness is trying to be aware of that feeling tone, because what often happens is we're not aware of the feeling tone and we're getting into an emotional reaction, and there is no way that we're actually noticing we are in a reaction because we haven't even noticed that original feeling tone. Anyway, that's so far. How are we doing so far?
Can I just check my understanding? Say, for example, the feeling tone was one of the extremely negative.
Yeah.
Does that arise from something which is sort of like the path kind of thing, so that actually there's nothing I can do about it in this moment?
Perfect is question. Perfect question, because it's very, very important. According to the Buddhist theory or tradition, it is a given. This bit about feeling, the feeling tone, is what we call a vipaka. So a vipaka is something, it's a bit like the weather. At the moment, when it starts to rain outside, there's nothing that we can do about it. It's just raining, you're just observing it's raining. So a feeling tone is like that. So pleasant, neutral, or unpleasant is a given. But the only thing that we can work with is how we respond to it. And that is the spiritual work. That is the work of the Buddhist path. So that is why it's so very, very important to be aware of this feeling tone, because it enables you to choose a different kind of way of reacting.
And that feeling tone, say the negative one, it can be extreme. That original feeling tone can have the, when you're saying it's negative, it can be extremely negative.
Yes.
Or just marginally negative.
Yes.
And that's vipaka.
Yeah.
So,
but also it's very pleasant.
Yes.
Yeah. It's also vipaka.
Yes.
So that is just, it's just
a given. Well. That's also
it's a given. Yeah. Pleasant, unpleasant, it's a given.
Yes. And can I also double check about the neutral as well?
Yeah.
So if for example, I was more in touch with my feeling tone, would it be such that actually there would be no neutrality, really?
Yeah.
Would that be the case? So actually, if I was that sensitive to it, I'd recognise that it was very marginally positive, very marginally negative.
Yeah.
And there wouldn't actually ever be a neutral. But obviously, as I'm practicing or trying to, you know, it's almost like sort of write speech, write this, write that.
In an ideal situation, this is how we would picture the mind of an enlightened being. You wouldn't have, not because you won't have all that stuff. But neutral is actually something that is quite close to what we know as ignorance or delusion. It's just something that you don't really feel. You don't really feel anything, you don't even observe it.
You're ignorant of it.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
So what happens in the moment, we were talking about it yesterday actually, Carmel and Sheila, is the moment that you're noticing a neutral tone to the experience, and you're starting to gently explore it, it'll go the other way. It will go either way open. It'll either go into the direction of positive, negative or unpleasant, or in the direction of something that is pleasant.
I remember you talked about that tin.
Yes.
And then it became pleasant.
Yes.
And the lid of this
became unpleasant.
Became unpleasant.
Yeah.
After initial thought of, initial tone of neutrality.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see.
Yeah. So the so a lot of the work in the in meditation, as you're sitting there in meditation, and you're becoming more aware of what's coming up, and some of the things that are coming up for us in meditation is pleasant, yeah, but a lot of things coming up are fairly unpleasant, you know, an unpleasant feeling will come up in meditation. And when you're sitting in meditation and you're just noticing that feeling quality, you're kind of learning not to react to that feeling tone. So you're learning not to get into your habitual, whatever it is, how you're used to respond, how you are conditioned to respond. So that is one of the many positive effects of meditation, that you're starting to be bare. It's forbearance. Mm, yes. You've got this painful feeling happening, and you're not reacting to it. You're not jumping up, and you're not sort of doing what you usually do. You might be eating when you're feeling unpleasant feeling, or you might grab for drugs or for television or for, that's all that stuff, the habitual stuff that you do, your strategies, yeah, as it were, to deal with painful feeling, yes, in order not to experience it, because it's too painful. You can't do it when you're sitting in meditation, because then you're just, you know, you're just watching your breath, or you're, whatever you're doing in meditation. Yeah. So you're actually in the meditation developing a different strategy, a more positive habit around that painful feeling, which is conditioned. All this feeling, painful, pleasant, whatever it is, it's all conditioned. So it's all dependent on conditions.
Mm. Yeah. So you're saying what's bringing it up is probably been conditioned, or your genetic predisposition, all these
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
But you're dealing with it in, by meditating, isn't it? You're learning to deal with it rather than react to it.
Yeah. And you're creating a space for, or you're kind of creating some more space, because still after the meditation you might still go up and do what you habitually do, but at least you're creating more of a space around it, so it's sort of becoming less obvious for you to react in a habitual kind of way.
Great.
Because I was just going to say that I think there is the distinction between pain and suffering, which I think is quite important. So I think somebody said that, well, pain you can't avoid. Pain is just a given. But suffering is an optional in terms of the that's what the Buddha talks about with the noble truths. Mm. So you do have, there is pain, but the suffering is all the stuff, all the emotion that you bring to the pain. Yeah, like, why me?
Yes.
Why now?
Yeah, pity. Exactly.
Why doesn't it happen to somebody else?
Yes.
Well, anyway, I don't know. All the stories that you create around this pain. So it's very important to experience it, but you're trying to experience it in a way that leads to more happiness rather than in a way that perpetuates the circle of suffering. Because the habitual way of, or if it's a bad habit, that is, you could even, it's very similar to addiction, actually, the way that you could respond to pain. So the habitual way doesn't lead to happiness, doesn't lead to more openness or more peace. And so in meditation, or just by observing, by being mindful, you're creating that opportunity to respond in a different kind of way.
Mm. That's great.
Well, that's some of the stuff I've written down. There's so much more. So much more. It's very interesting now, this all this stuff about feeling. Uh, Just to say that how it would go, just suppose that you have a feeling, a pleasant feeling. Just suppose something happens, maybe you smell something, or you see something. Let's say you see something. Let's say you see something, you're in a shop. Let's say you're in a clothes shop, you're selling clothes in a shop, and you see something, you know, like a piece of clothing. And just say that you just see it, and in that moment, like a very raw, the raw data of that moment is you see something, and there is a pleasant sensation. You see what I mean? You see something, and it is, there's a pleasant sensation. Well then, when you can start, so you see this piece of, you say, hey, it just happens in the moment, it just happens in the moment, and then you think, hey, I like this. And then you think, hey, I want this. Mm. And then you think, hey, I need this. And then you find yourself buying this. Yeah. And it's just something about that, how that works, and the little steps that you're taking sort of automatically, is that it goes from finding it pleasant to liking, to wanting, to needing. Mm. So that's the kind of way that craving comes into being, and there you are, and then you kind of perpetuated the cycle. And it also works the same with aversion. So you see something or you hear something, you think you've got this kind of, oh, it's unpleasant, and you think, I don't like this, I don't want this, I don't need this, I don't want to be around this. Mm. And then you get into aversion or anger or whatever you get into. So that's the same process. It's just craving and aversion is not different. Yeah. It's in one. Yeah, you really, really want it, or you really, really don't want it. And you kind of get into all these cycles of it. What else have we got? I've got so much here that I don't quite know. Is there anything that you would like to say at this particular point? Do you recognize this?
Yes. Yes.
Let's see what else I've got here.
You could feel pretty miserable. You could see something in the shop which initially brought you pleasure, then your immediate thought would be, I can't have that.
I can't afford that.
And so you might immediately feel quite angry. Sad, or it might throw you into all your sort of depression or whatever, just because you can't have anything like that. You can't afford it.
Is this quite interesting? Because I went just browsing, I wasn't necessarily going to buy anything, which, you know, somebody.
It's different than the same venture.
Yeah. Well, in this case, I was with somebody else, and we were just browsing, and I was just noticing how she kept saying, oh, I don't want this, I already have it at home, or, oh no, I don't want it, I can't afford it. And at the time, the space I was in, I was more thinking, oh, that's a nice colour. Oh, that's a nice shape. I wasn't really thinking about I want it, or, you know, I want to buy it. You see what I mean? No. A lot of the time I do. She knows me very well. But it's just, is it? So sometimes you can be in that space. You could just see it or hear it, and you could just leave it at that.
Yeah. So that also happens, that you see something nice, you appreciate, and you just move on.
Exactly.
And sometimes you just go to all the process that you said, that if you can't buy it, you go in that misery, and if you have money, so all those processes, and in the end you end up paying that.
Let me see what else I've got. So the... So actually, this all shows the importance of developing mindfulness. Because if you do notice the initial impulse, as it were, it's, you don't necessarily have to go into the follow-up of that cycle. You see what I mean? So that is why it's so important. Because let's say there is also there's a very much an ethical dimension to this, because if you do notice that first impulse and the feeling tone to that, you could potentially stop yourself from going from doing it, expressing it in an action that is not going to make you happy or other people happier. Yeah. You see what I mean? So it really definitely has an ethical dimension to it. Because I'm just thinking about, so the feeling tone is often a feedback instrument. You could say it's a beautiful spiritual instrument, a Dharma instrument, because it gives feedback about your action. Let's just say very simply, I was saying yesterday or the day before, I was making myself a cup of tea, and the steam, I felt the steam on my hand, and that hurt. And then I thought, instantly, I should not use this kettle in this way. Next time I need to adjust my hand, you see what I mean? Which is a totally natural kind of feedback loop, as it were, which we need in order to, you know, survive and stay healthy. But the same thing would happen in a different kind of way. Let's say I'm in an angry state and I say something hurtful. You know, you just say something and it's hurtful, and then you see the face of somebody that you said that to, you see them kind of hurting, and you feel that. You think, that really hurts. And that is the same kind of feedback loop in terms of for ethical practice. Because if you see that or experience yourself how your actions hurt others, it's just giving you really important feedback. It gives you feedback about that there is something that you have done that has created that hurt. So if you notice feeling painful, pleasant or neutral, you could actually look back, and sometimes you can't see, but sometimes you can see or intuit that there has been something that has gone before that has somehow created that pain for you in the present. You see what I mean? So you can use it in meditation or reflection. You can it works both ways. So the moment that you're starting noticing it, you create more of a gap, you have more awareness, which actually already means that it's more less likely that you get into the reaction. Just because you're there trying to notice it. That means you're just noticing it, you're just experiencing it, you won't get into the reaction. And at the same time you could use it, you could notice it, and learn from it by trying to look back and seeing, hey, is there anything that I can intuit that somehow has led to this moment that I'm experiencing this pain? Often I can tell you just don't know, especially if you've been meditating for a while, something comes up, you've got no idea. It is painful, so you're there, maybe you go through a few days of a bit of a painful stuff coming up. But sometimes you can know. For instance, you can know, I think, if, for instance, you've had an argument with someone, and then you notice throughout the day, maybe, you notice this, something painful comes up. And then it does give you information about the past, and then you can maybe think, okay, there might be a way that I could act, I've got a choice here, in order to mend something. So I could send my friend a card or phone them or send them just let them know that I'm sorry or something. I'm not saying that it's going to solve everything, but the thing with this feeling tone and taking responsibility for it is that you do know, okay, this is my feeling or this is what's happened to me. And I've got responsibility for this, and I am the only one who can actually do something to change this. Because it's not somebody else can't kind of do that for me. So I think that's an important aspect of it in terms of understanding or looking at your experience and disentangling it. Because if it's just one mass of emotion and blah, 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 it's really difficult to see which part of that experience you can take responsibility for and which part of it you can actually have a choice of or an influence on. So it's very important.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. And if you start to look at your experience and draw out these aspects for knowing, okay, there is something like a thought that's come up, a sound that's come, or a feeling, just a sensation in the body that I've had, and there is a particular feeling tone to that. If you know that, and you know that fairly clearly, you also know, okay, that's a given. This is just happening. It's like the weather, but I do have a choice.
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes, you know, your condition is just so strong that it takes a long time to practice before that moment of choice becomes more defined. But there is, I have all faith, and I think everybody who practices meditation and Buddhism ethical practice will probably agree with me. I hope that the practice will have an effect. And there is this Rumi poem, I think it is, that there's this hole in the street. And one day you walk in the street and you fall in a hole. And the next time you walk in the street and you think, oh, there is something here. I don't know exactly what it is, but you still fall in the hole. So you might fall in the hole a few times, but there will be a moment that you come into the street and you're thinking, there is a hole here. And then you walk past it, and then the story goes, the next time it'll be a new street. There'll probably be a new hole in it too. But so that's that kind of symbolizes that we call the gap, the gap in the moment of choice between that point of contact, the feeling tone, and that kind of that going into thirst, and that will become or create a whole new world of experience in the future. Anyway, how much have I got? We were just very saying to each other how much there is in this material. But, I think if you can, this is a very, very fertile ground for practice. The noticing of this feeling tone really is very revolutionary and transformative. If you can get a bit of a glimpse. And it starts, you know, we shouldn't forget the first foundation, but it starts with body awareness.
It does.
And the body awareness, we were doing a meditation earlier here at the center. But so the body sensations is easiest to start with, to practice, because for body sensations it's fairly easy to feel, oh, this is painful or neutral or...
Yes, indeed.
So that's fairly easy.
Easy.
And the sounds, it's also fairly easy. So you hear a sound, it's fairly easy to detect, okay, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And it's a bit more difficult, but it is still doable if you spend a bit more time, especially if you tune into it, starting with the body and then the sound. It is also possible that you will be able to feel or intuit or notice which feeling tone there is to memory, for instance, or thought. Sometimes it's very, very clear. You have this thought and you cringe. You cringe even. Which is interesting because it's painful, but it's interesting in itself that feeling, every moment conditions the next moment. So you might feel here is sound, and you might cringe, which causes the body to be more contracted, as it were, which causes maybe another unpleasant feeling to arise, and that causes maybe more difficult emotions to arise. So the whole thing conditions the next moment, which I think is in itself is another thing that is really interesting to look at. So the in the practice of meditation, it's always very important to, that's why we're saying, you're doing the mindfulness of breathing, going back to the direct felt sensation of the body, because you, and this is just human nature, to go into all kinds of stories and ideas which they just arise in each and every moment. So going back to the actual felt sensation, so going back to the bare information in your experience, because it's the mind running away with you into all kinds of stories and reactions that causes the suffering. And also, when you get involved in any kind of story that comes out of all these reactions that we've been talking about, it just means that you're losing mindfulness.
Yeah.
You could see me making this gesture, because you, when you're doing mindfulness of breathing, you experiencing it, you feel it inside of the body. And then when you're meditating and you notice yourself being involved in some sort of story, I don't know how you feel about it, but I kind of notice it's kind of going on here.
Mm.
It's not here anymore.
Yeah,
it's just
deep.
And then when you lose it altogether, it's I don't know, it's out there. I don't know where it is.
You are like another planet or something going.
So you've lost mindfulness, and also it kind of takes you into... It takes you out of the moment. So it's these reactions that that lead you away from the present moment. And it's happening, because that's just how we geared up. But still, the practice of bringing ourselves back into the present moment, it's not really bringing ourselves back, but just bringing the mindfulness back. That's where the actual work is happening. Yeah. and also, just to say, Sangharakshini's book, Living with Awareness, makes a strong point of this, that how important it is for the spiritual life, for the path, to develop positive emotion. So so there's nothing wrong with emotion, obviously, because, you know, joy and compassion and all that stuff, that is essential for the Buddhist path, and it's our inspiration that will sort of make sure that we're motivated. So positive emotion is a really
important
thing in Buddhism.
That's the metta bhavana, then, isn't it?
Mm.
So we're actually cultivating, because you say that we can't do anything about the feeling turn.
No.
But we can about our response to it.
Oh, yeah.
Response, that's what we're doing with metta.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, yeah, no, that is... thinking a bit about this Vedana, which is feeling in relation to the metta bhavana. And maybe you've noticed that before, those of you who are familiar with this topic of pleasant, unpleasant and neutral feeling, you've got the people in the metta bhavana that correspond to that, don't you? You've got the people that you really like, and you've got the people who are neutral, and you've got the people who are unpleasant, or that you feel are unpleasant, or evoking some sort of unpleasant feeling in you. So that's interesting in itself. And I was thinking today that even the choosing the people in the metta bhavana is quite a strong act. So you're choosing somebody. I think what you're trying to do in a metta bhavana in relation to feeling is also to develop more equanimity. So you're getting more real towards the person that you're having in your metta bhavana, and you're actually working to against your likes and dislikes, because you're going much deeper than that in the metta bhavana, than your likes and dislikes. So each and every person in the metta bhavana through the practice becomes much more whole, as it were. You know, in literature you've got flat and round characters. Do you know that phenomenon? So it's like a very sort of a round character is a character that's got all the characteristics of a human being. So a very complex human being. So with lots of different kind of features. Some are irritating and some are very appealing. But it's just a human being, and their behavior and their being is dependent on conditions. It's just coming into being because of a whole set of conditions coming together. And that is the same for each of these people in the Metta Bhavana. Mm. And they're all wanting to be happy. So what I'm saying is you're developing more equanimity through the Metta Bhavana. And you're working against your likes and dislikes, which are often very superficial.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just based on on a moment, often. Yeah. And, oh no, I won't go into that, that's too much. I think I'm kind of getting to the end of what I've got to say, really. Because I just want to say one thing. If you're noticing, making a practice, just sit down in meditation and noticing this feeling tone, moment by moment, what's really interesting about it is that it does change
every moment
you have a new experience with a new feeling tone, and not a new one, a different one. So it's like twittering of birds, really, constantly shifting. So if you observe that process in your experience, then you know because you're experiencing it, that feeling is impermanent. Mm-hmm. And you only have to stay with it for a fraction of a moment, and then a new one comes. So actually, it's not that important really.
Which we try to do, that is very important.
So that in itself can be very liberating.
Yeah, it is.
So I think I'll keep it at that, because I think that's quite enough.
Thank you, Maria.